Welcome to GVN's Talking Comics interview. On today's show, we welcome comic veteran John Livesay along with upcoming comic writer-creator Samuel Hain. Here's your host, Martin Sexton.
Welcome to another edition of GVN's Talking Comics. I'm your host, Martin, and today we're going to get to do something that we really love to do at Geeks Vibe, and that's to promote upcoming new projects. Now, this is actually not such a new project because this has actually been in the works for a while, but of course, the evil villain of COVID stuck his nose into the business. Now it's getting ready to come out June 7th, which is Slow City, excuse me for not saying the title, Slow City Blues, June 7th on the new funding platform called Zoop. So we're going to talk to the writer-creator Samuel Hain and John Livesay and find out what's all going on with the Slow City Blues. So let's welcome them to GVN's Talking Comics.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Sam Hain, as you said, writer, creator, had to learn to do the editor, handle all the financials. Thankfully, I didn't have to wrangle the cats like John had to. thank God for you, John.
How you doing, John?
Good. My name is John Livesay, and I handled the inks and finishes on the interior pages. And then also, as Sam just said, I was the artistic coordinator for everyone else. I brought in the rest of the talent for the book, except for Sam. So the penciler, colorist, the letter, and then all the people we had on all our many amazing covers.
Right. So, and we're going to get into that because it's a pretty impressive list. Sam, like I said, since the interview we had with you back in 2019, kind of go over again exactly how you came up with the story and exactly how you tied in with John and then Jim Shooter and pretty much how it all came about.
Yeah. So I love noir. I'm a big Dresden Files fan by Jim Butcher. I have all of his novels. I have all the ancillary material too. I even watched that horrible adaptation on Sci-Fi Canada back in like 2009, even though Paul Blackburn, I think, was really good as Harry. So I love that book. I'm a huge Bill Willingham Fables fan. Bigby Wolf is one of my favorite characters. I grew up watching NYPD Blue and Law and Order, any Dick Wolf show. I was a fan of that, like the intricacy of that. So there was a video game job that was a video game opportunity to write for the adaptation of Fables. So they were doing The Wolf Among Us, and I almost got it, and then I didn't get it, and it was in such a way like I didn't hear from him again, and so it felt it was very much of like, hey, no. I was like, well, I'll show you. I'll do it. I'll write a book. You don't know. I'll do a crazy thing. And so I was a struggling writer, and I was a server, at a Mexican food restaurant in the valley. And one day my brain just kind of opened up and this very roughshod idea plopped out. And I was on food, scraping by. I was on food stamps at the time. Thankfully for the government, serendipitously enough, it's like we started this journey on food stamps, and I was a bartender until COVID hit, and then we ended this journey on food stamps. But I saved up and I went on and I found some artists to commission the first handful of pages, and then I took it to my producing partner for film and TV, Mike Manning, and I went, check this out. And he goes, this is wild. I went, I know, right? I got an idea. And he's like, I know one comic book person, and it happened to be John. And so then I took, he brought it to John, and John took a look at him and went, well, we're probably going to need to get a different art team, but the story I think is pretty good. He went, let me go get a second opinion. And he brought it to Jim, and Jim, to me, it's akin to that scene in Kill Bill Volume 2, where Bill takes Kid to Paime, and he kind of just like drops her off and goes like, good luck, Kid. It very much was like, he brought me to Jim and he was just like, good luck, Kid. And so then we went through, he became a mentor. He's this, he's prolific. He's legendary. I mean, he's helped guide some of the careers of the best, Miller and Claremont, and you know, he created Battle World and Secret Wars, and it's, so mm-hmm. it's like to get to learn my craft from him was, I was beside myself, and he really helped, you know, kind of like helped me hone in the story and then taught me the ins and outs. You know, it was, I love what he would say. He's like, I screamed at Sam and he thanked me. It very much was like, I went to Catholic school. So I was used to, like, you know, getting whacked, you know, so I'm all very stick and no carrot. And Jim, you know, Jim is a no nonsense guy. And I took to that, 'cause you know, it's like, if he didn't yell, or if he, his whole thing, it's like, if he didn't yell, he didn't care, you know? So he cared very much, and he imparted me with as much as he possibly could. And then it was almost like a mother bird and her baby birds, where it was like, okay, I taught you everything you could. I took you as far as you can. Now get out of my nest, you know? And so he's like, go and fly. I gave you as much as I could. I have other things I have to do. I'm Jim Shooter, you know, dude's a busy guy. So then John, we went through a handful of, you know, he thankfully, I tease him and I call him the mayor of town, but everybody loves Levesay. And he put, you know, he and only John put together this fantastic art team with Sean and Dave and Thomas. And then, you know, we fast forward a handful of years and, you know, some trials and tribulations. And then, you know, the world getting turned upside down later, and we, you know, having some hiccups. Now we get to talk to Geek Vibes Nation again, and we get to hang out with you.
Huh. Well, you're lucky people, I gotta say.
very grateful.
Yeah. Okay. So, John, so when was it that, you know, in the initial, you know, look see of Samuel's story, what did you see in there that you thought that kind of got your attention?
Well, it was very unique and different from a lot of the stuff that I had been doing as a pro for many years. So I thought, I had a lot of people ask me over and over again if I was going to do a creator-owned book, you know, when, and I never put any thought into it. I was always busy just doing Marvel and DC stuff, you know, every day. So, you know, this, weirdly enough, this just showed up and fell in my lap. So it seemed really good. And, you know, I was like, you know what, I'm going to just take a chance and jump right in. And we just got it going. So the train kept moving and we kept adding more and more people on, whether it was, you know, we got the penciler next and then the letterer and then the colorist. And then I started, you know, latching onto all the cover artists. So it just kept moving along.
So, I mean, is this the first time that you've kind of coordinated all of that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so you didn't have any intimidation to doing that, or
I was just being me, and I'm pretty good about communicating with people and talking. So, you know, with just, I reached out and told them what the project was, and, you know, I called Sean. You know, we had worked previously on one tiny short story for Marvel many years ago, and I completely forgot about it until he reminded me. And, you know, we talked for a while, we hit it off. I sent him the script or the whole story that Sam had done for the first mm-hmm. storyline, and he liked it and he just came on board. And, you know, I don't know. It just wasn't with, you know, reaching out to the cover guys. I was pretty good friends with about half of them. And the other half, I just cold emailed, just expecting flat out no's like right away, because I didn't know them. And but they were generous enough to fit us into their very busy schedules, and they, you know, did some amazing pieces.
And so I was looking at some of these names. It's kind of course, I've been a big fan of David Finch.
Everybody is right.
And I talked to Pat Olaf recently about another book he was doing, but yes. Like I said, I just find it amazing that you could just write, ask all these people and they say, hey, yeah, sure. Okay, I'll do it. Yeah.
I've been very good friends with Pat for a long, long, long time. And we've worked, I think in the very long career I've had, I've done the longest stretch over Pat and over Howard Porter, you know, so I did a very, very long stretch of pages over Pat at Marvel. And then with Howard over at DC when we were on the Flash, and then we went over and did a big DC Universe book. So we have done, I think I did like around 800 pages with Howard or something. Wow. Like a crazy amount with Pat. Pat was like 4 or 5, but they're both great guys, and you know, they're very, very good friends of mine, and you know, a handful of the other guys I was friends with too. So it just, it worked out, and everybody was very generous with coming on board.
Now, just kind of actually a sidetrack question. You do traditional ink pen and ink, you don't do the digital thing?
And honestly, I don't know how to do the digital inks. I've just always been hand, you know, dipping my quill in the ink and going right in the board. I don't know how to do digital inks. I have not. I can do a little when I'm scanning my pages before I would send them Marvel and DC. Yeah. If I had to, I can do a little bit of cleanup. Like if it's a double page spread, you know, when you put on a scanner, you have to scan one piece at a time, and then you have to put them together in Photoshop. So I, about my knowledgeability of that, I can clean up the big black line in the middle of the two pages. So I can do that, and it's kind of about it. So it's embarrassingly bad that I should be more well-versed in it, and that's just on me.
Makes it amazing. He has all those originals on board. You get to, you know, he'll take them and show them, and it's, you know, it's, it blows your mind how detailed, and you know, how meticulous they are.
Well, and that's why I said, and I've actually only just started messing with digital ink a little bit, because I would be scared to death to touch any artist's stuff trying to ink over, because I know that my pen would splatter somewhere, next thing you know.
I've heard that a couple of times where there's a couple of the guys who they've never inked over a pencil board. They've only done blue lines, or they just have inked it, you know, digitally on the tablet. But yeah, the same thing. They're petrified of really screwing it up. But my thought on that is, like, you know, you have to, that's how you learn. You just jump right in, and you know, I mess stuff up, you know, I'll make a smudge and I don't know what happens, because I just randomly, I move my arm, or you know, you hit something and the nib will split and you get a splatter. So that's why they have whiteout, you know, as long as it's not some sort of crazy. I had one here, I'll give you one quick story where I almost had a heart attack. I was doing some pages at long time ago at Extreme on this I think it was a Profit, initial Profit or something. It was a splash page, and it was colossally late. Like, I had to drive up to get the pencils like at 11 a.m. and I had to have the whole page done by 6 or something, and then drive, this is before I even had a scanner, I had to drive the page to Extreme Studios. I'm going through it. All of a sudden it's done. You wait a few, you know, I waited my allotted 5 minutes for the page to completely dry before I erased the pencils. And there was one spot that I guess I really just layered that ink on that black area.
Uh-oh.
It wasn't completely dry. And I just did that. I was erasing, did this and this, and it did one black streak up and down. And I just about had a stroke. And I was like, oh! So I had to, on top of it being, you know, the 11th hour, I had to go in and wipe all that out and fix it. Was one of the probably worst accidents of doing it regular, you know, because it's digital, no big deal, you know, whatever. And even if you're doing a blue line, you don't have to erase a page. So there is the only luxury of doing blue line, which I will, you know, go along with, is like you save that step of erasing the page.
All right. Okay. So you guys are going to be using Zoop for your book. Yep. And up until this point, I had never really heard it. So what are the advantages of using Zoop as opposed to, you know, Kickstarter or any of the other crowdfunding?
John can tell you, and I'm sure everyone that you've spoken to who's done a Kickstarter, it's a second full-time job. So like thankfully for us, all 5 issues are done. All the covers are in. We're ready to go. There'll be no latency there. But normally they have to still draw the book, or they're in the midst of drawing the book. And so not only do they have a full-time gig having to create the book, they have another full-time job on top of that, trying to run this campaign. And so Zoop is the best of both worlds. And I'm so surprised that it hasn't been done before, because as great as it is for creators, it's just as good for the customers. I mean, on the creative side, they help you handle the campaign, they handle the marketing, they handle the fulfillment, they handle the distribution, they handle all of that. They asked us for a quote because we're the first ones out the gate with them. And so when you go to create, they go to approach other creators, or when other creators approach them, it's Zoop handles the heavy lifting so pros can focus on the work they want to do. They take the owl out of crowdfunding, which they really do on our side. But on the customer side of things, they make it as easy as Amazon Prime. There's no backer kit, so you have to go back and add stuff after the campaign's done. There's no trying to, you know, having to use your credit card, your son's credit card, your wife's credit card, your dog's credit card to get all of the variant covers you want. It's just point and click, and however, you know, click, 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 however many you want of whatever you want. It's simple, easy peasy. And so that was what really drew us there. And on top, not only do they handle the heavy lifting, going through it, you know, a more traditional publisher route and going through the, like, all the middlemen, you lose a lot of that profit, you know, and our team has, as you know, has worked a very long time. And so we weren't really looking to give up ownership, and Zoop helps keep as much profit as possible, so we can kind of keep the lights on and keep everything going, but make it as easy as possible for the funding side of things.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay, so you brought in Sean Mall as the artist, mm-hmm. and Baron as your colorist. Was that something that you had to pitch to them to do, or exactly how did that work? And did the work surprise you any as they produced it?
That's a John.
Well, like I mentioned earlier about bringing Sean on board, we had our talk, and he kind of was into it, and I sent him the story. Then he really gave us a firm yes, and he jumped on board. And after I got a good amount of the pages inked, then we reached out to David Baron, and it worked out well because I've worked with him a handful of times on books, and Sam had known and met him as well, so they were familiar with each other, and it randomly worked out because when we asked him, he's so busy, I didn't think his schedule was going to allow it, but he made it work, and you know, he's all done. And a good friend of mine, Jeremy Hahn, recommended Thomas for our lettering and production, and he's worked with him on a ton of books, so he's been great. So yeah, man, it's very nice to see everything finished and seeing how the colors laid down on the page and stuff. So it's been very nice.
It's been a trip to, as a, you know, being the, to, having a, being a first time at bat, like getting to experience and have being able to lean on all of these, you know, all of these seasoned veterans and pros to really kind of shore up any of my weak spots, like traversing that learning curve. So it was such a treat to be able to work with Sean, whose expressions and like the physicality, because he does a lot of like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, so he knows how the body moves. And having John, and you know, and he's so meticulous and it's so clean and it's so well detailed, and then having Dave, who's just like a modern master in his field, to really bring everything together. So it was such a pleasure to get to work with them. You know, I feel like I probably got spoiled. You know, like if this is my first time at bat, my high water mark is so high. It's like, it'll never, like, I'll just do Slow City Blues stuff with these guys.
One thing we haven't talked about, don't give me the, pretty much for our fans, give us mm-hmm. kind of the plot of what the book's about.
I'll do you one better, and I'll give you both the series overview, and I'll give you then the first story arc overview. So the series overview. Thank you. So the series overview is, a detective becomes trapped inside his imagination after a horrible accident, and he then has to clean up Slow City, which is the a physical construct of his imagination, if he's ever going to make it home to his wife and son and fix his life. So that's for the whole series. For this story arc, it's the same. A detective is trapped inside his imagination after a horrible accident where he and his partner, a 6'6" smart aleck skunk, have to race to solve a gruesome double homicide before a gang war erupts and destroys Slow City.
Okay, now we talked a little bit about the skunk before we got started here, but mm-hmm. we're going to talk about him again. Like I said, you don't see too many 6'6" skunks named Moo. Where did the concept of Move originate?
That is, that's on John. That's John's fault. That's John's fault. He originally was a raccoon named Rack. Very original. I called him up and I went, it's a raccoon. And he goes, no, dummy, it's not a raccoon. And I go, well, why not? Being indignant, you know, because I had a great idea. He goes, why do you think you made it a raccoon? That's a smart ass, pardon my French. And I went, I don't know, because it's funny. And he went, no, how about what other funny raccoon did you probably just read about or watch? And I went, he goes, maybe Rocket Raccoon. And there was a long pause, and I went, I'll find another rodent. Okay, bye. And I hung up on him. Okay, I gotta find another one. I call him back. I went, it's a skunk. It's hilarious. It's funny. Skunks are funny. And then I hung up again.
Actually, when I told you, I read through the first issue, and you do these little sidebar things that, to me, that's kind of my gig. When I write, yeah. I do all these little sidebar things, you know, talking about the Disney thing and everything. I thought they were hilarious.
Thank you.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing maybe hopefully more of that as we get along here.
Okay. Absolutely.
All right. So, like I said, we're starting June 7th to the
cover. Yes.
So will all the issues be available at that point?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I guess today it's out now. All five issues are out. We're going to have them in a really nice hardcover, or for the people that love floppies. And as John said, and you said, we have such a great cover lineup. We have an A and B box set, and we're doing them in like really nice slip cases. So you can get all of the floppies that you want. So even if you're a collector, or if you just want the one, you know, the hardcover, we have the whole story arc for you to digest right away.
Okay, so now if this goes as successfully as we all imagine it will, do you have other stories with Soul City Blues in mind for this, or was this kind of just a set, you know, five issue story, and that's kind of where you left it?
We tell a complete noir, right? So we have a very satisfying end, because that was something that was, you know, kind of drilled into me by Jim, was clarity and making sure you tell a like every piece has to be a satisfying piece. It can't just, you know, you can't just leave hanging, you know, hanging chads, right, from the 2000 election. But I have the next story arc written, and the next couple ones after that planned out, and then I know where we're going for the whole series. I'm really excited if this does well and people really like it and they want to see more of it. The world gets a lot deeper and a lot wider. So the next story arc will be anywhere from 12 to 15 issues, and we'll still, you know, try our very best to give it to you in that big like season drop Netflix kind of chunk bingeable model. But it's like as wild as the first issue is, and as wild as the whole first story is, the next story gets even crazier. Like, it's bonkers bananas wild.
I know it was effective, because like I said, after I read the first issue, I'm thinking, wait, that's it? Wait. I was looking for the rest of the story. So I'm looking forward to it. Okay, so that's pretty much all I've got, but I need to know, after this, do you got something else, any other projects going?
Okay, let's start with you, John.
Yeah, I mean, other than us ready to jump into doing the next Slow City storyline, I'm just, whenever random Marvel or DC gigs show up, I just got back onto inking Chris Pacello. So I was one of his group of inkers for the last 5 years, and there was a little bit of a break last year with COVID. You know, Marvel put a lot of their books on hold, so now we're back to it. So we're on Nonstop Spider-Man. So the issue I started back on was issue 3, which will be out next week. So the one's just one random gigs coming up. I'm doing that, but we want to focus on really making sure we're all our attention is on this for the moment. But yeah, random things come up. You know, I'm doing them.
Yeah. Okay. So, how about you, Sam?
For me, I'm writing is rewriting, so we'll be honing and refining the next story arc. But also, this gave me the confidence. My other mentor is the novelist Kristen Hanna, and so she's helping me, or at least like guiding me. You know, not exactly the school of hard knocks like Jim, but like overseeing. I'm writing my first novel, and then. Was really excited because it's the 7th, and so people will kind of already know this, but I want to talk about it specifically with you, Martin. We're also looking for some alternative exploitation for Slow City Blues, so you can have it and take it in with your eyes, and hopefully you'll be able to have it download into your brain in other ways possible too, very soon.
All right. Well, fantastic. Okay. Well, like I said, that's all I have for you. And we're going to be following this quite closely as it comes out. More than likely, every time we get one of these crowdfunding projects, our bank account goes a little smaller because I'm buying something, which my wife will thank you for that, I'm sure. I said she's thanked everyone else that I've been buying. So I hope they're really cool books. I appreciate it. Like I said, and we'll be following behind you guys real closely.
Also, mention, you know, with that price in mind, we're having an amazing early bird deal today and tomorrow. So go in and check out
the first 48 hours.
Yeah, the first 48 hours are going to have a lot of the items we have, which we don't have a ton of items, but the few we have are very nice. And we're going to have some good deals today and tomorrow price wise. Yeah. And some exclusives that you can only get today and tomorrow. So if you guys want to, check out the Finch,
you're on the video. Yeah. We'll have, that is the David, that's our David Finch cover for those that are on the video or just listening on audio. It is a virgin black and white exclusive, early bird exclusive of the first issue. You can grab only for the first 48 hours though. So that's something to check out. Yeah.
Yeah, see, dear, it's Sam and John's fault if I spend up spending money. See, it's your fault.
Okay. I was gonna say, you know where to address the letters to.
Yeah.
All right, guys. As I said, we'll keep following it and hopefully talk to you again real soon, you're doing your next book.
Yeah, and you can find everything at wearezoop.com.
Yep, or zoop.gg. So go now, check it out.
There you go. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you for listening to GVN's Talking Comics. Please come back again. Talking Comics is a production of Geek Vibes Nation.